So, yeah, Chris.
Well, what
were
we talking about? Eat the blame.
Eat the blame.
That was big, right? It's a big thing.
There's plenty to go around.
And I've really been working with this weekend. It's like, yeah. Oh, man, I feel bad. Like, I feel really bad. All the time, I'm always blaming people for stuff.
Well.
You know, not like telling them bad things, but it's in my brain. In my head. We do.
So I've been working, and it creates a lot of problems for ourselves, as you notice, right? Because it's in our brains.
So there's this tension building up, and I remember you also saying, like, remember, this is going to be hard, and don't expect to. There was something you said, like, how did you put that? Don't expect to get this quite right, or no, that wasn't really it. It was like,
well, just we have to be gentle with ourselves. Because you know, these teachings are based on the observation that this is what we do, right? And don't forget, this is from someone who taught this 1,000 years ago. I mean, this is very important to remember. 1,000 years ago, they thought this was a good teaching. So it's 1,000 years later, and it's still a good teaching. Because this is what we do when we're at odds with ourselves. We take that at oddsness and we just spread it everywhere, you know, like Christmas candy or something, except it's not candy. It doesn't make life sweeter. So it is difficult. It is what we do. So we have to, not, for example, with eating the blame, we have to eat the blame about blaming. Mm-hmm. Right? But to do it, we have to not blame ourselves for doing it.
Oh, that was a bit there.
You know? We have to be very gentle,
right,
and recognize that the reason that we do blame everybody for everything, mm-hmm, right, is because we are afraid, because our ego is very sticky and self-centered and worried about itself, and so we want to just push it out on everybody else and say, oh, it's not me, it's you guys. So when we see that we're suffering like that, we have to be very tender with ourselves. Very, very tender, and say, it's because I'm suffering that I'm creating suffering. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have to be very tender. Very, very tender. And just begin by saying, almost like a whisper, do you know that you do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe I do. Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, huh? Yeah, maybe more than sometimes. Okay, that's good enough for today. You know, we're just very gentle. But just the acknowledgement, you know, just becoming aware of it is huge. Mm-hmm. It's gigantic. Mm-hmm. I mean.
And also the part of being grateful for that, like I was doing that, that was actually kind of neat. I was like, oh, it's okay to be grateful.
For
the problems.
Yeah.
You know, there's this, like, you know, like somebody, you know, maybe some, like an example might be the dishes, right?
Right, yeah.
Maybe I don't want to do the dishes, but I don't hate dishes. Yeah. I get kind of bitter. And mm-hmm. then I realized, well, what's the point of being resentful about doing the dishes? I mean, just creating resentment for nothing.
Yeah, just do the dishes.
So just be grateful that I have a chance to do the dishes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or I have a chance to do whatever.
Oh, I could talk all night to you about how grateful we should be for doing the dishes. Mm-hmm. First of all, we're alive. Mm-hmm. Second of all, we have dishes. Mm-hmm. Third of all, we're washing them because we had food. Mm-hmm. You know, do I need to go on?
Yeah. No.
Do you realize how privileged we are to have to do the dishes? And on and on and on. You know, I mean, and on and on and on. I mean, this is, you know, one of the great things about it, for example, we'll use the dishes, but we can apply it. I remember Thich Nhat Hanh saying to us, you know, so long ago, almost 30 years ago, that when we look at our food, we should see the empty plates of all the people who have no food. Mm-hmm. We should look at our food, not to feel guilty, but to be aware that this nourishment is not a given in life, so that as we take our nourishment in, we can dedicate ourselves to all of those beings who are not taking nourishment in, you know, so we use the nourishment to go right back out to the world. I mean, so it's a fantastic thing. I have food in my plate, means other people have no food, mm-hmm. have no plate. Mm-hmm. And so I can eat so gratefully mm-hmm. and then dedicate that nourishment to all those people who don't have it. I mean, as Thay said, thousands of people die every day from no food. Thousands. Mm-hmm. Not one person. Thousands. Mm-hmm. That's a startling thing. So, you know, we can always look deeply, and I think that's the key, Chris, mm-hmm. is to look deeply at our situation. Really deeply. Past the usual control of the ego, which doesn't allow us to look deeply. It only allows us to look to the point where it's not threatened. Mm-hmm. Right? And I said, okay, that's enough. But actually, to go past it strengthens our deeper self. Mm-hmm. And that's very important. So it is painful. But, you know, these things are painful to see in ourselves, to acknowledge. But it's only painful to, you know, in the end, what is a very small part of ourselves, mm-hmm. that frightened ego. That little frightened part has a huge voice. But it's just such a small part of us. And yet we listen to it as if it's us. And in our practice, we go past it. And it develops a kind of bravery, you know, courage, confidence. It strengthens our commitment to continue to practice until, as Tozen Zenji said, we see self includes everything. And we live on behalf of that. And then you know what the ego does. It takes credit for it. And then we have to work with that too. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fine to say this is difficult, because it is.
What's included in blame, besides some criticism and judging?
Yeah, all that judgmental mind that makes other, that says it's you, right? Mm-hmm. That throws everything out of this body and says it's you, it's your fault, you're the one who did it, you're the one who said it. And, you know, like this is a common one. You made me mad.
Mm-hmm.
You made me mad. But I mean, this is my own personal feeling. Nobody makes me mad. Mm-hmm. I get mad because I get mad. Mm-hmm. Like you can say to me, oh, I really love you, and I could get mad. You say, what are you mad about? I say, well, you made me mad when you said that. I mean, and then someone else says to me, well, I love you, and I say, oh, it's so nice, I'm so glad. They didn't create any of that in me. I'm the one who created that. I'm the one who came up with that because of whatever the conditions were. So, you know, that's kind of blameless, you know, that which pushes everything out onto the other. You're the one who did it. And by doing it, we tear that fabric of oneness that we actually are. We all do it.
It's a very it's a very good way to work with kind of bringing the oneness in. Like mm-hmm. it's like here.
Yeah, take it in. You can, you know, and as soon as you push away and create two, you're in delusion. Because even though I'm sitting here and Karen is sitting here, we're clearly two people, two everything. This two everything is included in oneness. And we have to find it. Just how that is. Yeah, Jeff.
The part that when you talked that really resonated with me was, I know, maybe I didn't quite understand, but just we call it a twist.
Yeah, acting with a twist.
Acting with a twist, or like another motive for what we do. I mean, that's, to me, that feels like everything I do, basically. I mean, you're right now, maybe I'm talking right now because I want to be heard, or I want to be loved, or I want to be seen. Like, how do you know what you're, whether it's a healthy, true motive or not? I mean,
it's a great question. Yeah, so how would you know? How would you know inside of yourself what your motivation was? How can you know?
if it's feeding me, I think it's okay. But maybe with that motivation feeding me, it might be taking from someone else. That's where I get confused.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, well, one way is to become dedicated to really admitting our games. Seeing them, becoming aware of them, alert to them, acknowledging them, noticing the overall pattern, right, of our games. The things we've done our whole lives. Things we've done our whole lives. And that we've always known, and that we were really afraid to admit, because we think that we would just feel terrible. But just say, okay, you know, I tend to do this. Yeah, that's, you know, I tend to do that. And the truth is, it hurts me when I do that. But I've done it for all these reasons, but to just stop justifying them and just say, not judging them, just I do this. So getting away from the judgment about it gives us a kind of courage to admit, you know, the way we kind of are underhanded. You know, that's what I called giving as a form of taking. Right? A kind of little bit of underhandedness, or like the person who is always raising their hand. You know, I got the answer. Well, why do they need to be so smart? Who needs to be that smart? You know, why can't they let somebody else be smart for a change? You know, but they're always up there. So that's a kind of anxiety. You say, you know what, I'm very anxious. I always have to answer first because I'm very worried that if people don't think I'm smart, they might think I'm dumb, and that's dangerous to me. So I always make sure everyone knows how smart I am, right? Or the people who volunteer for everything. Oh, I'm so good. I'm just so good. Why do you have to be that good? Well, let somebody else be good for a change. You know, and same thing. You know, and you say, why am I doing it? Well, I do want to help, but you know, is there any greed in my needing to be the one who's always doing that? And I'll tell you, the answer is probably yeah. Mm-hmm. So getting hip to that, not hating ourselves for it, but becoming aware of it. When we do that, our heart opens first to ourselves, because we the fear is laid out there for us to see through the behavior. We can forgive ourselves for it and say, it's only human, after all. I was scared, and so I was... Like the story I told about being funny. You know, I was very funny because I was very shy and anxious. So, you know, I had a skill. You know, I had a real skill. I could control any situation by being funny. Until I thought, I feel like this is killing me. Mm-hmm. You know, because it just made my anxiety stronger. So I chose, I think I'm not going to make my anxiety stronger, and I'm going to feel insecure rather than anxious. So I moved from anxious to insecure, and then from insecure to feeling, I'd rather be insecure than controlling. You know, I'm kind of worried. And then I had to figure out, well, how should I be so insecure? Maybe I'm really okay. So then I had to figure out if I'm okay, and I found ways in which I was okay. And you see how you grow, you know. But it starts with the acknowledgement. And then I finally realized, hey, I'm okay. They're okay also. They're probably okay too, but oh look, they're acting that funny way, you know, that controlling way. I bet you they're scared. And then my heart opens, and you know, it just goes from there. So when you embark on that journey, you start to tell the truth to yourself about yourself. Pretty soon you can see yourself very clearly. You know what your motivation is. And you know it without the fear of judgment. And that's the big thing. Secretly we fear judgment, negative judgment. Mm-hmm. Right? We seek positive judgment, we fear negative judgment. So we put on this mask. You know, I'm the one who always blah, 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 whatever it is. You know, and we hope nobody notices it. But of course, to everyone else, it's transparent. Everyone else sees it right away. You know, everyone knows that kid in the front row raising her hand all the time is just a nervous wreck. Everyone but her, you know. She finds out later after, you know, 50 years of therapy or something. But, so that's the answer. You embark on a journey of truth within yourself. And that, just embarking on that journey is compassion. And because it's compassion, It encourages you to want to know more and more and more, because your heart opens. You become the person you always wanted to be and always were, but you were too defended to know it. Does that answer it?
Yeah, it does. It's kind of my own journey, and whether it's clear in me or not, I mean, I can only answer that.
Yeah, but you know, little by little, you'll know because you establish a standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know it inside yourself, a real true standard. And the quickest way for it to happen, Jeff, is to not judge what you find.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't judge what you discover.
Right.
You just look at it. Like I say, there's the floor, there's the mat. I don't say, there's the floor, that's good, there's the mat, that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
I just say, there's the floor, there's the mat, there's the behavior,
mm-hmm.
right? There's the motivation, period. End of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in my case, I take everything to Zazen. I sit, no matter what I find, I sit. And I just let it find itself. I sit with whatever I find. So it's a beginning, but it's a very revolutionary beginning. It's the beginning of transformation into our, let's just say, compassionate, tender souls. And then, of course, as we judge ourselves less, we judge everyone else less.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As we're less worried about ourselves, we're less worried about everyone else.
Yeah, it's a big one for me.
Yeah.
So, no, that's more okay. No more vacuuming for sex.
No more vacuuming for sex? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So glad you're taping
this. Yeah. But it's not your problem.
Yeah. Your memoir is that. Yeah.
No more vacuuming for sex. That's right. That's right. It's true. It's a great phrase.
Yeah.
And also it gives me an idea. I never vacuum for sex.
It works.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
No more sex for vacuuming.
Yeah. Cats out of that bag.
Yeah, Annika.
You know, there was something you were saying quite a bit earlier about I don't know how you put it, but you know, the more, you know, basically more pain someone has in them, the more pain is spread around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and there's, what comes up for me around the whole, what I was thinking about on the weekend when you were talking about some of the stuff, is that, you know, being in a helping profession,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, there's so many homeless people at my work site, and there's people with addictions and special needs and like all this stuff, and I'm interacting mm-hmm. with a lot of these people, and I come up against my expectation of how I should be treated when I do something really nice for somebody else,
mm-hmm.
that kind of mm-hmm. situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think about it most of the time unless I go out of my way and I help someone and they're being really nasty,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty common.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's that thing you were saying, you know, the more they're suffering, the more they spread it around.
Yeah.
And
right.
And they, in fact, feel really resentful towards me, because who am I sitting up here in my little office? Mm-hmm. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. They got you pigeonholed.
Yeah, and they're just like, you know, I wish I was in your place, and you don't know what I'm going through. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, and still they want my help. But, you know, and it's an interesting thing, because it comes up. I get to see it in myself, because I do this whole thing for somebody, you know, which is my job, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways... And then they treat me like, you know, mm-hmm. they're not very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel really resentful.
Mm-hmm.
And that resentment is a really good
mm-hmm.
Key. Like, mm-hmm. Because it tells me I had some huge expectation here.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. you're so good. You changed my life. Mm-hmm. You know, like whatever. The story
yeah.
I had in my mind. Whereas mm-hmm. if I'm just doing my job and they're doing their job and being in crisis and
mm-hmm.
and spreading their pain around, mm-hmm. basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that on the weekend, because you talked about that, like that was kind of where I was going with you,
mm-hmm.
when you were talking about some of mm-hmm. that stuff, because it's so obvious to me,
mm-hmm.
like I can get really like, oh, I did all this, mm-hmm. you know. And when we did the meal chant, which I chanted a million times, you know, mm-hmm. there's that part about the emptiness of the giver, the receiver, the gift, you know. And I was really sort of looking at that and thinking, my response to their response, you know, to me helping them and they're not being grateful or whatever, tells me that I really haven't mastered the emptiness, finding the emptiness or the boundlessness of the giver, receiver, and the gift. Because that's like, and I think if I could really sink into that somehow, and I have no clue how, but that really came to me that this is the key here for me. Like it was just felt so
that's great.
If I could just get the whole thing of like, it's this wheel of, we're all like giver, receiver, and gift, giver, receiver, and gift, giver, receiver, and gift. And then that whole thing of like expectations, you know, we just go.
Yeah. Well, just imagine, I mean, to be able to, first of all, to be able to be aware of the damage that expectations brings is huge. That's that alone is huge. You're way ahead of the curve on that. And it isn't that we don't have expectations. It's that when we become controlled by them, we lose, right? We lose even the spirit of the gift which we had in the beginning. Right? Because suddenly it becomes about us. Right? Suddenly it's about us. You don't take that job just because it's about you. You know, you genuinely want to help these people. And because you're a human being, you don't mind having someone say, oh, thanks very much, that was very helpful. I mean, that's a sort of ordinary expectation. But also because you know you're dealing with a population that is so desperate that they may not be able to see outside of their crisis. Enough even to say thank you. You know, a simple thank you. Which anybody, you know, like you hold the door for me, I say, oh, thank you. You know, you're just holding the door. It's not like you're getting me mental health help, or you're getting, you know, finding me a home, or getting me food, or getting me away from abusive spouse or something like that. I mean, it's simple, you know. So if I can say thank you for you holding the door, certainly they can bow down, and buy you a car, or, you know, what, you know. That's the way the ego works. So when you catch it, it's fantastic. Because if you were to allow it to control you, you would actually be undoing the thing that does come purely from your heart. You know, really undoing it. And that's when the resentment starts to become ingrained. You know, a lot of time people in helping professions burn out. Sometimes because the workload is so brutal. You know, like there are times Shirley comes home from, you know, a case where the children are being just destroyed by their families, and this, or she has to maybe take a child away from a parent. You know, and I walk in and I see her with her head in her hands, and I know she's just been destroyed. You know, and you know, there's almost nothing I can say to her. She has to find that place that lifts her up again, and it's a pure place. You know, so people in helping professions, they have that pure place, but the nature of the profession is just brutal, just absolutely brutal. You know? And to be aware, as you're talking about, of where you get caught is actually a lifesaver for you and for the people you're working with. And then suddenly, giver, receiver, and gift are all empty again, simply because you become aware of it, because you stop. Right, you stop. You don't say that thing. You don't go on. You just stop. And that stopping is enormous. It's the same thing. You see what you're doing. You don't judge it. You don't say, oh, I'm bad. I should be pure and I shouldn't be resentful. You just stop. You see it? It's a reminder. You know, that's what these, remember, they're mind training slogans. They're reminders. Okay, and you take the hook out of your back. Okay, just back to here. And the more you do it, the more transformative it is in our lives. And that is, you know, that's what we're doing here. We're trying to let our true, whole, pure being emerge. And these are ways to help us do it. So what if you fail on Monday and succeed at 9 and succeed on Monday at 10, you're working on this. You know, this is a lifetime and it's worth doing. Otherwise, we just start increasing the pain wherever we go, because then we're just as crazy as everybody else. You know, crazy means unaware. I mean, you know, like when you come and talk with me in Dokusan or something like that, there's just no judgment in that room. I'm not sitting there saying, oh, that's good, that's bad, no, he's really screwed up, she's really terrible, or he's really wonderful. Yeah, I'm just listening to you. And I'm just reflecting to you a way of being with yourself. You know, gradually you take it in. You just can be with yourself in a non-judgmental, loving way that can has a chance to reflect clearly back to yourself. Oh, okay. I see now. You know, I've told this before, and you know, the cruelest thing Shirley ever says to me when we have a kind of domestic dispute is, Peter, look at yourself. She doesn't tell me what she sees. She just says, you go look at yourself. And she knows I will, so I'm angry with her. Because I don't want to. I want to feel empowered by being, you know, a jerk. Right? That's a really nasty thing she does. Yeah. She hits me with my vow. In the quietest voice. It's really horrible.
And so how do you show gratitude for that?
I do it. I have to stop. You know, I may kind of like hitting the brake, you slide 70 meters, you know, but I stop. I have to, after all.
In a situation that Annika was just talking about, where does gratitude fit there?
Oh, well, what an honor to serve that population. How grateful to have a position to be able to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. And to be able to even if the other person cannot see what you've done, to know, okay, they've got a place to stay, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. This was able to, you know, it's a constant gratitude. Mm-hmm. And the fact that those people are, you know, desperate, I mean, there's nothing but room for gratitude in the whole situation. And even if they walk out angry because, I don't know, you got them a burrito instead of a Burger King or something, you know, whatever it is. You know, just, whew, how fortunate someone had a meal today. You know, there's just endless room for gratitude just to be in that situation. I mean, I don't know if I should be talking so, you know, personally like this, but several months after, you know, when after Shirley got hurt, someone, she actually said to me, you must be just so sick of me. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's an honor to take care of you. Mm-hmm. That's all I felt. I just felt it was an honor. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, I was tired. I didn't deny it, you know. But it was an honor, you know. So the gratitude is, you know, is in the act when you're in that situation. It doesn't mean you don't have hard days, but in a way,
an example of giver, receiver, and gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I admitted to Shirley that as she started to get better, I felt a little sad. Because it was so nice to just, you know, take care. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, selfish on my part. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm glad she was getting better, but I also thought, well, I'm not going to get up and do all of these things. We should probably stop here.